And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is October 5th, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to think over what is really going on around and what we are doing to make things better, and how can we overcome all this, you know, increasing of terror acts and you know, confusion in the world. And we're going to do it all in the company and the very good company of the best friends America can have. God bless his soul, Frank Sinatra. His music will remind us that we can overcome, and you can be cool and you can be pretty and you can be tough at the same time. And nothing is against another. Today, it made me think about it because I saw a quote that Frank Sinatra said. He said, "Don't be afraid from anything or anybody. Just remember." You know, that's what he said. Just don't be afraid. So in this time when we all are pretty much confused and we are not sure what we're going to do, we're going to be first brave. Because this is our world, those are our children, and the world is ours to keep, and we're going to do everything in our power to overcome this and to make it better. So we're going to be united, we're going to play it right, and we're going to make it go away. All this terror act going to go away soon because we are on the same page. In history, for the first time, I think that we can say it, that all the world, of course, they're going to be screaming and they're going to be, everybody's going to go against, you know, someone or another. But at the end of the day, we are targeting the same target, global war. We're not going to tolerate it, and everywhere. And we're going to start where it's hurting the most, and we're going to bring some, you know, peace to the area, then we're going to cover the rest of the world so we can keep on going to the next level like humanity should. So let's start with our first segment. There is much to talk about, and I know that you have plenty to say about it, but today there is some listening tape that it will be good to hear.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'm gonna be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. We're going to start listening to, you know, something, a voice from the past, a voice that meant well for his people and meant well for Israel and for the rest of the world, King Hussein of Jordan. There was a day when he and you know, both of them passed away already. One in both of them, you know, one was sick and one got killed for peace sake, let's say it, Mr. Rabin of Israel. And both of them are honored men. And let's listen to them when they address Congress, after they signed the peace accord.
We have now become partners in shaping the future of all our peoples. We seek for them a future of peace, stability, and security, the prospects for which are growing before our eyes. It is a heartwarming sight for those of us who have continuously pursued this goal throughout our lives. We in Jordan have always sought a bold peace. We have been conscious of our responsibilities towards the coming generations to ensure that they will have the certainty of leading a dignified and fulfilled life. We have sought a peace that can harness their creative energies to allow them to realize their true potential and build their future with confidence, devoid of fear and uncertainty. None of this can be achieved without establishing a direct dialogue at the highest level of leadership. This meeting in Washington, at the invitation of President Clinton, represents the beginning of a new phase in our common journey towards peace between Jordan and Israel. It is a milestone on the road toward comprehensive peace in our region. This meeting was preceded by a trilateral Jordanian-American-Israeli meeting at which my brother, Crown Prince Hassan, represented myself and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, and a foreign minister, Shimon Peres, represented Israel. The trilateral working group was established under an agreement completed at the meeting hosted by President Clinton at the White House in October 1993. Following my recent visit to the United States, in light of the status of negotiations, I decided to share with my people the realities affecting our search for peace. In a meeting with members of our parliament, I addressed the entire Jordanian nation. I have been rewarded by their approval and support.
I've come from Jerusalem in the name of our children who began their lives with great hope and are now names graves on end memorial stones, old pictures in albums, fading clothes in the closets. Each year as I stand before the parents whose lips are chanting Kaddish, the Jewish memorial prayer, ringing in my ears the words of the same famous Archibald MacLeish, who echoes the plea of the young dead soldiers, and I quote, "They say, relieve you our death, give them their meaning. Let us give them meaning. Let us make an end to the bloodshed. Let us make true peace. Let us today be victorious in ending war."
We missed the last segment. I apologize. This is on YouTube. You can catch it. But we want to talk about the fact that this month, on October 26th, we're going to celebrate 21 years of since the agreement, since the peace accord. And what happened with new youngster political leaders, some people forget what people sign on, especially the king's son, the king of Jordan right now, you know, a friend of Israel that, well, we are a friend of his, of course, because we save much pressure, you know, out of him, for say the least. We don't receive the same treatment because last 6 months, he said, he declared that that holy place in Jerusalem belongs only to him. So let me quote Article 9 from the accord, the peace accord between the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan and Israel. And this is article is place of historical and religious significance in interfaith relations. Each party will provide freedom of access to place of religious and historic significance. This is the first that it's called, that it means free access. It means that there is no reservation whatsoever to anybody. Second, in this regard, in accordance with the Washington Declaration, Israel respects the presence special role of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, present special role of Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan in Muslim holy shrine in Jerusalem, when negotiation on the permanent status will take place, Israel will give high priority to the Jordan historic role in this shrine. Three, the parties will act together to promote interfaith religious relation among the three monotheistic religions with the aim of working toward religious understanding, moral commitment, freedom of religious worship, and tolerance and peace. Now let's ask, what part of this article people didn't get? What part of the Muslim shrine, is prohibited to visit to any other religious, Christian and Jewish the same? None. There is no such a thing. There is no such a thing. And especially in respect, Israel will respect. It means that Israel is the owner of that site. And it will respect. In this accord, Jerusalem never got transferred to Jordan back because Israel won it back after, 2,000 years. She got back to the roots where the kingdom of David, once declared Jerusalem as the Jewish capital the only place in the world for Israel, but for the world. Also, Jerusalem belongs to the world. And now we have the king that incites the actual raising of terror on the holy shrine, which their signature. So let's just ask, the kingdom of Jordan, if they are actually calling back. Now, I know that our representative from all over, the world's representative, because the world needs to get a broad agreement she signed. If Jerusalem is by United Nations International, the United Nations needs to call the Palestinian off. Now, if the Jordan Hashemite Kingdom realize or read this contract, they know they are overlooking the very significance of this, freedom of religion. It means peaceful understanding between religions. It means that the Hashemite kingdom is failing to do what is more morally expected from her, to stand by peaceful coexistence. Now she's calling off those goons, and now the Palestinians, beautiful, they decided to send the kids, like really cowards. They didn't send the big guys, they're sending kids. They incite them, those little kids, what they know, they, for them, guns or stabbing, it's from from the games that they have. It's not difficult to make a child, go crazy and run him over. And what they do? They just incite them. And then they put in the Israeli government a representative who gets paid, I don't know by who, because in the last election, we very well know that they got transferred from the State Department $400,000 and cash money to those organizations. Oh, they're not going to incite the violence. Oh, no, they're not going to do anything wrong. Yeah, you transfer money. And I, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but please tell me I'm wrong, that the America don't finance this kind of activity. Now, we have a problem here because, by all means, everybody needs to check what they are doing. And we are all in the same place because, you want it or not, we are playing the same game. And this one is going to be over soon because we're not going to tolerate this anymore. Now, Jerusalem is a holy site by God, by the Bible that we all hold, by the Bible that the Justice Department make everybody swear on every day. What's wrong with us all? We need to get a 3 steps back, take back, and decide if we're going to let this riot go on. Now, the Israeli government, you know, I will give it to them. Benjamin Netanyahu is a cool, cool guy. He's not sending the army, you know, go shoot them. He said, oh, we're going to, you know, advance something to destroy the houses of those, you know, killers. Of course, they want to have a, you know, yeah. If you send your kids, just remember that, you will suffer the consequence. Then we're going to make sure that we're not going to have people on site. But what this level of tolerance give us? Give us more, because they think we're weak. Instead, they don't realize that because we are strong, we don't want to hurt them. Because maybe the world will get upset. No, but the world cannot get upset, because that mistake that Israel made, or I don't know, she was about to make in the, you know, in the medical center in Gaza, that the terrorists acted up on, and she needed, you know, to stop it. We didn't know if to bomb it or not. Now we have the same exact method of modus operandi of the terror again. They put, you know, those missiles or those attackers inside hospital grounds. And what happened? The Americans from satellites, they see somebody shooting, they're shooting back. Well, it's a war. It's not that they're shooting candies. It's not that they were, you know, singing to us. They were shooting out of airplanes, or they're shooting and attacking people, civilians. And we all want to stop it. So if you blame anybody, blame the casualty of war. That's normal. What can we do? It's a devastation. We are talking from the heart. We're talking about, you know, about the people who lost their lives. We're talking of thousands in the street. We, the Jewish people, had to go through those streets, you know, in the Second World War. We want those people that hate our God to be well. We want them to be well. But then we have a problem that, you know, there are people who decide to be on the peaceful, but, you know, they raise the flag of the Palestinian state. You know, the Palestinian state that never got created. In the United Nations, you tell me about bogus ideas, the bogus, you know, policy. What kind of a message you're sending to the people? Now, they have no ground. They have, you know, the only economic thing that they are actually doing, which is beautiful, is made with Israelis. So they like to be Israeli on one side. They run. They are even in the parliament, the Knesset. And then on the other side, they don't let any infrastructure be built in Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, because, oh, Israel is building. Well, give us a break. We need to finish the job, you know, work around. And sure enough, yes, we need to keep it around. Well, it's international ground. Everybody's allowed it. And tourists have the right to visit the holy city. And what we are sending them, oh, stop building in Jerusalem. No, we're not going to stop building, you know, in the holy city of God. This is against on the moral level that we are living with. But what do you expect us to do with those kids that's run in the Western world around and stab people? And then, Okay, now let's talk about the character and the moral level that we're talking. That lady got stabbed. Her husband got stabbed and killed on sight. She had a 2-year-old son that got his feet blown by a bullet that ran out of the gun that they took from her husband and shoot. And she was running, stabbed with the knife to her shoulder, running to save her kids. You know, mothers are a great thing. Women are a great thing. They save. She was wounded and she was running. So she was calling to help. And there were faces, those faces of Arab, Israeli from East Jerusalem, Palestinian, you call them, Arab. I don't know what you call them, but human they weren't. Because they tell her, die, you die. She was calling for help, and they asking, they want her dead. They didn't, you know. Thank God, you know, that she got saved. But there were also around. It's not that special son of I don't know what who did the job. It's all the people around who didn't stop him. So when the terror attack comes around and you people say, oh, it's not all of them, just remember, all of them did not stop them. All of them didn't come out of there. All of them are afraid. And they are not all of them, are all the terrorists are Muslim, but all the Muslims are afraid of those. So who is in control? So it's the leadership is a terrorist. So what do you want to do? And now we have a king. That called them, okay, go, because it's ours. What do you mean it's ours? Darling, there is something I want to remind the king of Jordan, and with due respect and honor, because, you know, to be a king, it's a divine role. You know, we need to remember that when we see a king, we bless God for giving us the honor to see a king. So we see a king, and we reserve him all the honor in the world. And his father was a great man, and we really liked him a lot. Okay, so King of Jordan, you forgot one thing. That if you, Jordanian, are in charge of the holy shrine, like you claim, it's your deal. There are terrorists in your, you know, in Jordanian jurisdiction. If this is the jurisdiction of Jordanian, it's their job to clean the mess or take care of the terrorists that are in there. Now, if you tell me that those terrorists are not Palestinian, I'll say, okay, who are they? They are, you know, a clunch of some group. But they're calling themselves terrorists, and they admit it. The Palestinians admit that they make the terror. Oh, because, you know, if you don't listen to us, we'll terrorize the country. Okay. But you forget one thing, you all terrorists, you wannabe. Because you forget that you get, you know, social security in Israel, right? That's the deal. You're a citizen of the place. Because, or else, I don't know. But let's assume you cannot play both roles. You cannot be Israeli citizen and Palestinian because it's against 181 resolution of the United Nations. You have to choose which side you are. But let's assume that the Israelis don't overlook that. But the fact that you want to have a country and then you incite to terror, what kind of a country do you want to have? You want a terrorist organized land that the United Nations will provide for you, give you some effort, and the rest of the world will give you, you know, all what you need? Oh my God, you know, yeah, let's make some shipment, you know, hysterical shipment of those people that came, like the Marmara, that wanted to come and help those Gazans that get, you know, a siege by Israeli force. They love to use, you know, the Israeli with such an aid. And what they do? They're terrorizing. You want a terrorist activity? Now, I have to prove it to you. We gave up the Gaza Strip. Look what it is. It's terrorist. So they're pushing the Western world to give them a land to become another terrorist organized and in order to destroy Israel, which it's not going to happen because, you know, if we're God send, it means that we are here to stay, right? Now, if you think about it, you cannot choose to be in negotiation peace and then terrorize the land. You know, I would call everybody who think about using his time or sparing his time from the European side, because the Americans are very clear. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Now, I don't know about the Russian. We need to verify that. But the Europeans say, you know, they talk to them. They talk. Of course they talk. Oh, whoa, bless Israel. Let's boycott Israel. Wow, what a great way. So think. You are boycotting to help terrorists. And look what you did. They're hauling you out. God, you know, that's the ultimate poetic truth. So what are we going to do now? We're going to call them up. They have to go back to their places and behave, because they're not getting anything. They're not getting Jerusalem. They're not getting a state, because right now, as far as I'm concerned, on the war on terror, they're on the wrong side. They're with terrorists. I don't care, but the Palestinians just made it to the I list, to the A list. Terrorists all over. They're acting as a terrorist, and they are. So if they think that they can get away with it this time, they chose the wrong time. Sorry. And you know what? Touching the place of God, you have to respect God's place. It doesn't matter who you are. This is not yours or ours. It's God's place. And when you undermine him, when you undermine God, sure enough, you're going to waste, you know, lose, because that's the mathematics in this world. And you guys are all people of faith, I believe. You better remember. Get back. Go back. And Mr. King, you know, the son of King Hussein, bless his soul. Please read the agreement that we all signed on 21 years ago. Let's get to some music.
I've got you under my skin. Deep in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I've tried so not to give in. I have said to myself,
beautiful Frank Sinatra. We miss you, Frankie. We got you under my skin, guys. They're getting under my skin sometimes, but not for the right reason. You know, when you see all those funerals and that, you know, it gets to you. Get to the guts. Seriously. We are suffering it. This is not funny. It's really, if you see the load that the government of Israel has on its shoulder to keep such a balance of power and tolerance. And there are so many nice Arabs. Guys, you don't understand. When they want to be okay, they are okay. And they are not. They need to let go. There was a lady from the Muslim community who came out and talked on TV, and she said, I reject this kind of behavior. I reject the killing of innocent civilians, and I reject, you know, hurting the fabric of the community. You know, let's remind everybody in the world that the Jews and the Muslims are stepbrothers or half-brothers. You know, we had one patriarch, which is Abram, and the old patriarch is the father of both nations. So I don't understand when we can get our brother back, because, you know, the fact that they want to kill us, it doesn't mean that we don't miss being brothers. And I remember telling it to the ambassador of Palestine in Washington. I said to him, I want my brother back. It's enough. You know, let's you know, let's try that. And I know that in many Arab countries, the Jews and the Arab lived well, made a lot of business, a lot of money. And we can turn it around for the sake of, it's. I don't want to talk about cliches, you know, humanities, that man, but for the sake of progress, we are smart people. We know things. We need to go on, and we need each other. We need everybody to play around to get to the next. We don't know who we can be. They don't know how life can change. Now, listen, they broke all rules. They broke all the regimes that really gave them a hard time. They didn't help them, and it broke. Now, when Russia stepped to the plate and wants to help the Syrian, you know, government to remain in power, Maybe I don't know what's bad and wrong. Seriously, I just know that this guy cannot go over, you know, the International Court of Justice without getting, you know, his due day, because he did kill a lot of people. And after this civil war that takes, you know, you can count it in years now, and it's almost 250,000 people. Mostly children and, you know, women are killed. And let's not talk about, you know, the vandalism of all these architectural artifacts that they have there. The, you know, the Roman Empire, you know, thousands of years ago, they destroy it right now. They're like a gang that got over the country, and the regime is fighting a gang street kind of without looking elsewhere. I don't know. You know what? This is not something I want to get into, because I don't have enough details, and I know just from the mathematics of things that stuff needs to be better. But let's say that, you know, now the Russian took an initiative. Well, everybody say, oh, you know, Putin, what a great guy. But excuse me, what about Bush? What a great guy that he took America and stay in Iraq for 10 years to keep the, you know, the life of everybody oil going. What's wrong with telling America, thank you for doing your share, thank you for taking the burden on your shoulder. This is the price that we all paid. I've been a part of American you know, society for years. I ran for the Senate because after 9/11, because I knew that they need to empower the base there. I knew that they need some encouragement. I knew that the people are really, really shocked. And I got out of my comfort space, and I went and I said, you know, guys, this is the war on terror. We need to be strong. And President Bush was all out. The Republican did what they can. And then they say the Democrats, I love this, and did you find the weapon, you know, the chemical weapon? Well, there we found them. And I used to say all the time in debates, and by the way, guys, I was the first woman, you know, like to run the state country in the GOP race for the Republican, of course, nomination, which I couldn't get, but I wasn't scared more to win than to, you know, I didn't want any donation, anything, because I just wanted to help this world, make it better. And they used to say, oh, what, President Bush did not found the chemical weapon, and I'm saying to them, yet, they didn't find it yet, because you didn't look at the desert. And we knew that it was shipping it in the trunk, and there was sure enough many trucks. And look where we found them. We find all that chemical weapon that seemingly was, you know, was not found in Syria. Well, duh. So if we found the weapon, give it the credit to President Bush. And give it to his brother, Bush, you know, to get his right time in space right now in the race. Because when you talk to me about, you know, running for president and people don't have a clue what they're talking about, like, you know, I wanted Fiorina, Carla Fiorina, to have a space, you know, on the debate stage. Of course, She's a woman. She deserves to have. You know, if we have one woman, give her a break. It doesn't matter what position she held. But then when she said to the world, I'll put missile, you know, in Poland, you just knew she doesn't know what she's talking about. And I'm so sorry, I'm talking about a girl, but she doesn't know what she's talking about. When you, if you collect the history and if you know something about the Poland missile problem, you remember that the last president that wanted to put missiles on Poland ground, which was the Poland president, died in a crash accident over Russia. What are you guys thinking? You think that you can just go and put, you know what the stage look like? Now, Carly Fiorina, by all means and due respect, you're a wonderful speaker. You are eloquent, wow, but you don't know what is really happening on the ground. You have the page of history before the war on Iraq. Your assistant needs to be more updated and maybe older than, you know, 20, I don't know how old they are, actually, your assistants, but whatever it is, we need somebody who talk Turkey. And I know that Jeb Bush will talk Turkey because his brother run the show, okay, for all this. This is like a very, very important surgery that the world needs to take because we don't want to destroy the world. It's not like we're going to go and bomb everything. We know how it's going to hurt. We just want to make it better. And all those, you know, that looking for safe haven, remember, terrorists looking for safe haven where they can operate in order for them to grow. If you give Palestinians any ground, or if you tolerate any of them running a terrorist organization like Gaza and give it, you know, help, you're helping terror. If you get any space for the terrorists to organize, you will have war. So the, you know, like we got rid of the pirates in the sea. I remember the question, how you get rid of terrorism, like we did get rid of the pirates. You don't give them a safe haven. That's how it's going to do. All right? Now let's keep on going. Let's talk about the presidential candidate because it's really important. Now they're talking about, oh, the president. The president does what he does. He does it in the same method. He wants peace. He wants anti-gun, anti-war. What do you don't get? Peaceful coexistence. It doesn't mean that war sometime. It's peaceful. And that's the way it is. And it's great. But right now we need to think what's the day after, okay? Right now, we have to think, who's the candidate? Now, we have Donald Trump that is running, and he's cool and he's incredibly powerful. Of course, he doesn't have the experience and knowledge about the politics of the world, but trust him to find the best advisor because you're good as your advisor. Can know everything. You don't know if you sometimes, you know, somebody will get something out of the blue and you need an answer. You will have an expert. That's your job. Your job is to coordinate everything. And by the way, successful is going to be okay. However, Jeb Bush, on the other end, he definitely has it. He got the talk, he got the walk, and he got the cards to play with. And he looked wonderful. On the other side, the Democrats, they didn't decide if they want to put a third candidate. And, you know, the vice president has, you know, the charming age of 72, which is very lucky. But if we know the players, we know that they don't hold a chance, especially when you have two consecutive times of the Democrats, you probably will end up with a Republican. So let's assume that Biden, Vice President Biden, doesn't want to run because he knows it will be just a horse for the race. And it's not really, and not by all means, with no disrespect by calling a horse, it's just a matter of speech. We have to understand that they don't have a player in the game right now, and Hillary Clinton has more to answer from her experience, forget this thing of the email. It's ridiculous. It's something that it's not relevant. But she will have to answer more to what she didn't do in Benghazi and what she didn't do in the Middle East, what she didn't do in so many affairs, you know, because this mess, it's also her mess because she was the Secretary of State. The fact that John Kerry came to play and help and holding really still, even though he got hurt, even though, you know, he can put his heart on day in and day out, he's not in the game and he's not running, so they don't have a player. And until then, we have the ball in the GOP's court, and they're looking good. They're looking good because you pick any one of them, they're excellent candidates. You get fantastic leadership of the GOP. And anybody who said the GOP is, you know, is in trouble, look at those people. We have senator. Look at Tom Cruise. Ted Cruz. I'm sorry, Tom Cruise. Ted Cruz. See Marco Rubio. See Senator Lindsey Graham. My God, you have honorable people to stand for America, and they are there. I wish they could become, you know, the block of leadership to run America in the next stage. That would be nice, okay? But, you know, everything at this time. Let's get some more of Frank Sinatra songs, and I hope this time it's on time. And we'll be right after that.
Was written by Fred Ebb and John Kander, orchestrated by Don Costa, and stolen by me. Start spreading the news. I am.
All right, this is Orly Benny Davis with PBS Radio, The Impossible Truth, one of the best radio to listen online when you get the voice of the people, by the people, to make the world better. And we all together, you know, embracing a new page for history to come. And we are all together working hard to make our voice heard so maybe we can make a difference in this time of challenge. I know that you all there are very busy and you're between, you know, this is October. Some of them, a few guys are facing, you know, hurricane season. And I pray for you all in South Carolina. I love you. And I hope that you recover fast and it will go away soon. And all the rest of, you know, the people that in the world that are facing, I know that there is in Europe, some kind in France, they having in Nizza, one of the best places in the world, they're having some devastation. So we'll pray for you when you have, you know, this time of challenge between, you know, between hurt and skies, we could say. I don't know how we can say it in English, I guess. I'm translating sometimes. That's what happened when you speak different languages, you translate from one another, but it doesn't always sound the same. Anyway, our time is almost over. Let's listen to one soundbite that I want you to listen to.
Israeli diplomat, statesman, and writer Abba Eban died on Sunday at the age of 87. He was only 31 when he became Israel's first ambassador to the United Nations in 1948. In 1950, he became ambassador to the United States as well. Between 1963 and 74, he served as Israel's deputy prime minister and then foreign minister. He was famous for saying of his adversaries at the negotiating table, they never missed an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Abba Eban was an extraordinarily eloquent man and a friend of this program. We remember him tonight with a look at a few moments we had here at this table.
If you never do another thing for your country, you have earned your place in its history. The youngest ambassador to the UN, the youngest, I think, ambassador at 35 or thereabouts, yeah. Here in the United States, a partner with David Ben-Gurion, the great leader of Israel and prime minister. Yet there are those who say Abba Ibn is more popular in the world than he is in Israel, that he has more power because we are so attracted to him than he does in his own country. Is that fair, and how do you deal with it?
Well, listen, I can't really complain about what's happened in my own country, because I was a minister, a senior minister for 15 years, and I only got dismissed when I was top of the polls, indicates what a perverse thing public opinion is. But so, the fact is that the arena for my action was the international arena, when the problem for Israel was to assert itself within the universal context. And therefore I had a much bigger platform. I had the microphone.
Yeah.
The United Nations in those days, I think Boutros is going to pine for that.
Yeah.
I remember when there were 5 pages of the New York Times with the speeches, and some, I think this station was broadcasting the either the platitudes or the wisdom of people every night. And except for some occasions, like the Desert War, the United Nations has sort of faded a little bit, but in our days it was crucial, it was central.
And your staring rhetoric made the case for Israel becoming a member of that body.
Yes, one of the things I had to do, and do as the head of our delegation, was to propose Israel for membership in the United Nations at a time when many historic states like Italy and Romania and Bulgaria, Ireland, Austria were not getting in, and we, as it were, jumped the line. And that was vital for us, because we had to eliminate from the Arab mind the idea that Israel was temporary or illegitimate, and membership in the United Nations, whatever else it does, is a certificate of legitimacy.
Incredibility, yes, legitimacy is the word. Oratory. You and I have talked about this before, but you are one of the, I think you've even been honored as some great orators Hall of Fame or something.
Yeah, I'm the only one who's alive in that, which they seem to resent when I call them up to thank them.
What? Did you learn that? I mean, how did you become so good at being an orator?
I'm going to leave you with that question. How you become so good? You just, you know, gold, 100% gold, pure gold. Abba Ibn, God bless you so. We had a wonderful hour today when we spoke about Jerusalem, how where people need to fix their, you know, a prism to see it right. And one quote from Abba Ibn, you know, the Palestinian never miss to miss an opportunity. And this time they are missing the opportunity also to come back or to be on the right side of history. And they've gone on the wrong side. And let's not talk about Turkey and, you know, that they're running ragged these days because everything is going to happen in their borders. I want to salute you. I want to send you all my blessing and love. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. We're going to be back on Wednesday with the special Italian music. God bless you all. Be well. Ciao, ciao.
She passes each one she passes.